In the meantime, do either of you have anything, you know, anything special about identity that you've come across in your travels that you wish to bring up today?
Well, one mention I may make to an ITU meeting a couple of weeks ago, which is having some focus on decentralized PKI. I may say a couple of words on that case.
So weren't ITU the guys who made who made the standard for X.509?
Exactly.
They are known for over-engineering their stuff.
It is. It's correct.
I hope they take a lighter approach to DPKI.
What I see is that they had an initial paper providing an kind of extension of possible extension of X509 for a decentralized PKI. But my view, it seems quite immature and not completely aligned with the comps that the most people in the identity community has in mind. However, there's some work going on within study group 17 there.
So are you a member of that study group?
I'm not officially a member since we are not, my company is not an ITU member. I've been invited to that. And I will be invited again for the next meetings of that specific subgroup, which we call question. Within study group 17, which is dealing with decentralized PKI. So I have a report. Yeah, but the point is just to trying to keep track of what's going on in this high level organization, which is in and an UN organization. Which, as you say, had this tendency of to over-engineering things, but of course they have a heavy word on the X509, of course, so you might be able to they propose something as a standard. It might have some weight eventually.
Oh yeah, they'll definitely have weight. All right. I think before we start, I have to talk about and show the antitrust . Let me do that right now. So it'll take me a second to do that. I'm already recording the call, so if you have to say something sensitive, please hold on to your thoughts. God, I have difficulty finding this. I'm going to go into the identity working group, and I see that Marta is here, so we'll talk about the paper and rebooting Web of Trust, but I believe she didn't go there, although she was expected to go there. So I'm going to share this slide, which I'm required to. Right. And I don't need to read this out. You guys can all read, I think. So basically, it's to prevent anti-competitive behavior by industry competitors. The other slide that I show is the fact that we are all welcome in the hyperledger community. Then we go through a short set of introductions where we will say who we are so that people have an idea of why we are participating in this. And so I think I should start with myself. I'm the host of this meeting, chair of the Identity Working Group, and chair of Capital Markets SIG. I've been involved in Hyperledger for many years. I also have many years of development experience in the financial markets and capital markets sector, delivering full stack and end-to-end applications. Now, the next person on the list is Marta. By the way, keep your introductions short, and you know, if you don't want to say anything about yourself, that's also okay. Marta.
Hi, everybody. My name is Marta Bikarska. I work for Hyperledger. I'm director of ecosystem for Hyperledger, and I've been with Hyperledger the last 3 years. Identity is one of my passions rather than day-to-day job, but I have been working with the Identity Working Group and other working groups as well on that topic.
Adam Burdett. And I should repeat, we don't require you to say anything. If you wish to, just keep it short to 10 to 15 seconds.
That's okay. I'm Adam Burdett. I'm active in the Hyperledger Indie community, and I enjoy joining these calls and listening when time permits and situation. So thanks for having me.
Yeah. I'm good.
Marta, I think you're okay. Axel.
Yes, hello, sorry. Let me give a sec. Is my sound on? I've been having issues.
No problem.
Okay. Yeah, so you can hear me. Okay, good. Yeah, so sorry everybody for the confusion. My name is Axel Simon. I work for Red Hat. I am part of the office of the CTO at Red Hat, where I keep an eye out on blockchain, DLT, and the entire space. I'm interested specifically in a personal level on the what the Identity Working Group is doing, and the Indie Project and the Sovereign Project. So I come and try and join these meetings every now and then when I can to see what's happening, because I find the space very interesting, and I'm always trying to find ways to get people inside Red Hat interested too.
Kelly.
Hang on. Call me back in just 1 second. Sorry, Vipin. I'm actually on the phone with Bank of America while I'm listening to this call because someone is hacking my account. So.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's
sorry to hear that. Okay. So, you know, you can wait till later to do this. Luca.
Hello, I'm Luca Boldrin. I'm based in Italy. I work for InfoCert, which is a European certification authority. the traditional kind of. We work very much into identity, and we are sovereign stewards. We are implementing on top of the centralized stack for expanding the traditional PKI offerings.
Richard?
I'm Richard Espin with Evernym. I'm responsible for our roadmap of contributions to the Hyperledger projects, and so I like hanging out with this group. Thanks.
Thank you. Would you be able to speak about the last implementers call, or should I just go to the meeting notes?
Unfortunately, last week I had a conflict and couldn't attend the implementers group.
Okay. Anyway, it'll be over in 5 minutes. Stefan.
yes. Good afternoon. I'm Stefan Mui. I'm a consultant with many years' experience in the financial sector. I'm currently focusing on KYC and digital identity, especially through my involvement within the European Commission. I'm based in Paris, and I have a pretty heavy focus on anti-money laundering regulations when it comes to using digital IDs.
Z.
Hi, Z here. I'm currently working on a land rights project in Africa. Joined this group about a year ago, on and off, trying to participate. Would like to focus on helping newcomers get their feet wet on identity.
Great. Somebody asked, I think it was Axel who asked about the notes. Actually, the notes link is right at the top of the page that you are probably seeing right now. Maybe you're not because of the phone thing, right? So it's, I'll try to put it on chat.
Yeah, I tried to go to the address that I can see at the top of your screen, but it says resource not found. So I was wondering if there was some sort of a conflict of permissions or something like that. So, and I was wondering if
there was No, there isn't.
Okay.
There shouldn't be.
Okay, well, I'll...
I'm coming here directly from the INT working group, main page.
Okay.
And I go to the meeting notes, and voila, I'm there. Maybe that's, I'm slightly constrained here because I'm doing too many things here. And of course, people are welcome to put their names and their information here so that we can add, add a reference.
I was
to
able
everybody.
To reach the notes too, thanks to your little how-to, so thanks a lot.
No problem. Okay, so the next one is the identity working group implementers call. We have an implementers call, which is the twin of this, but on alternating weeks. That means this week there will not be any call, and next week on Thursday there will be a call. And I just wanted to show you the kind of activities that they're undertaking here. There's quite a bit of activity here. There's like working group reports on Hyperledger Indy, Indy Semantics, Ares, Ursa, Sovereign. Just to show you a breadth of activities, here, Sovereign, W3C, verifiable credentials and data updates, and rebooting Web of Trust, what happened there, the highlights there are that quite a bit of interest in the concept of agents and hubs. So basically the distinction that he makes here are hubs are focused on data management and agents are focused on performing actions on behalf of an owner. That means agents are more like a delegated smart contract or delegated you know, intelligent, semi-intelligent agent. Then threat modeling, and then, you know, stuff about basically abuses. Alice abuses her credential. So these were the three topics of interest. And something really did come up, which was on, they have started a DID working group at W3C. And that DID working group is only open to members of W3C, but you can join the mailing list and you can get information about what they're up to. They seem to be hitting hard. There's a lot of people, and the first meeting minutes are quite extensive, and they're also meeting in Fukuoka, Japan, for the for all the W3C groups to get together. So that's going on right now. So there's a lot of exciting stuff. The next one is about the working groups. There's been a debate in Hyperledger TSC, and they have appointed a task force to say, are working groups relevant? What is the purpose and the governance under the TSC? There have been many proposals. One of them is that you know, working groups are basically are expected to have a work product, but what is a work product here is meant to be the paper, but at the same time, the paper is receiving, you know, very little attention, and some of the papers that we have already published through the architecture and other working groups do not seem to have such a large uptake. At least we don't know. There is no data on that. And that's one of the things that I'm suggesting, that we need more data to find out whether people are actually reading them and are they useful. So in your, so the proposal is to get rid of working groups, or at least get rid of the work product report to the TSC. And the TSC, in any case, seems to be distracted by a whole range of governance issues. So their time is taken up with that stuff. And the working groups will continue to exist, according to me, because that is the only true supra-DLT forum, meaning it is not specific platforms. It is more about the particular topic at hand, like identity in our case. So that's one thing. So I wanted to ask your opinion about this topic. You know, anybody has anything to say about this?
This is Kelly. My only thought is, and this is based on my 20-some years in higher ed, and that is these type of distractions generally don't result in much progress. And so my thought is that as a core group interested in identity, and everyone in this call is obsessed with identity, more than interested, if we could just pick a couple of things like finishing the paper or working on a paper together, then while everyone is spinning basically on these topics. And by the way, Vipin, I think that your feedback in the discussion forum at TSC has been really good. Anyway, I'd like to just see us say, hey, what's one or two things that we can get done by the end of the year? Because otherwise people are going to be talking about this a lot. We've got a major conference coming up in spring in Q1, and I'd like to just see us kind of push forward with identity, because as I noted, I just have been on the phone all morning trying to get my identity back. So I think that we can do a lot here, and it's a little bit of a sidebar conversation as to what TSC decides to use for a naming system.
Marta seems to have something to say, or Sumit.
Well, yeah, I had a point that I wanted to make that I think that from what I understand, the discussion on TSC is not really about not having working groups deliver anything. That's more about special interest groups, that special interest groups are not really there to work on anything. It's more of a platform of knowledge exchange. From my understanding, the working groups are quite supposed to be quite focused on work products and deliveries and so on. And that's why they fall under the technical steering committee and not under governing board like the SIG. So I think that obviously there will be a lot of discussions here. I think that the TSC is going in the right direction, trying to define a lot of things. So we just have to wait and see. But I second what Kelly just said about finding deliverables and work products and kind of focusing on source these things and doing it right rather than having distractions within the group.
Great. I mean, I just want to bring it to our attention because this could be a storm in a teacup kind of thing, but it's happening. Anybody else has anything to say about this topic? Otherwise, we can move on.
I've long viewed this particular working group as the on-ramp for anything else identity. I mean, identity is such a huge topic. I don't think we can just meet like once every other week to go through everything. But the point of having an identity working group is this would become an on-ramp for people to like then you figure out if you're into actual indie implementation or other things identity. But I would love for this working group to at least be part of having on-ramp and what I'm calling Identity 101 session for people to come in and join the larger Hyperledger community.
Beautiful. So I had prepared a very short sort of talk on civil protection. Starting with the definition of the phenomenon of civil attacks, and then extending it to the larger use cases out in the system, and then it's going to be extremely sort of on a high level. I don't want to get into the weeds with that one, but at least familiarizing ourselves with one of the threat models in a peer-to-peer network is very important. And then we then work into, I know that people say this is a permission network, hence no civil attack is possible, which I think is naive. And so I'm gonna stop the share for a moment and I'll bring up my presentation and then we go from there, okay? By the way, welcome, Leonard. I haven't seen you around in a while. Give me a second. I'm kind of... But maybe before that, we should talk. Marta should say something about the collaboration on the paper because it's a very rare opportunity to have her on. I guess you're in a very noisy environment.
Well, not very noisy. I'm just on a train to the airport. So apologies for the background noise. In terms of the paper and what this group has been doing, I've looked at the white paper and I'm pretty impressed. It's a very, very big and broad topic, and it seems like the writers are trying to come up those topics, which will result in probably more of a book than a white paper, but that's amazing. I wanted to bring up to the group's attention the fact that we have Hyperledger Global Forum, I think that's what Kelly was referring to, and this is a great opportunity for this group to work on a proposal to submit a talk. Unfortunately, the deadline for it is 26th of September, so it's quite soon.
27th, I think.
Oh, 27th, yes, you're right. So if the group would be interested in putting together a proposal based on the paper or just part of that paper, that probably would be an amazing idea, and so definitely show that the group is working on something and show kind of your leadership as well, thought leadership, as well as hopefully other more in the group and more contributors to the white paper. The proposals do not have to be based on a white paper. That's why I suggest that using just a piece of the white paper that is currently existing will be probably enough. And the requirements are, you know, available on our website. There's an abstract and a kind of a part of why this talk would be useful to the community. And so, yeah, I just wanted to bring it to everybody's attention, answer any questions you might have. And, of course, if possible, I will be very happy to kind of help with the white paper and moving it forward, because it would be great to have it written up and finalized.
So, anybody has any response to Marta's call or...
Yeah, Marta, this is Kelly. I'd be happy to work with you on that for the 27th.
Oh, beautiful. And Kelly has been extremely helpful in copy editing the paper and making it readable. It's come a long way just due to her efforts in making the paper readable. So we have to thank Kelly for the current state of the paper. There are some sticking points, and some of them are quite sensitive. You know, this whole other thing is sensitive, but I see the same phenomenon in many national identity systems. They start off by having some modest aims, and then they go and become sort of all-encompassing, and then once the abuses become clear, then the court system, if there is a strong legal system, gets involved and beat back the broad application and the broad overreach into surveillance. And there is a whole movement against surveillance all around the world. So how can identity coexist with that? This is one of the key themes of the paper. In fact, Sybil, which I'm going to introduce in a minute, is also very relevant in this context. So anybody else has anything more to say about this? Otherwise, I'm going to launch into the whole Sybil thing. Okay, I'm going to share that. I'm not going to do the presentation format because sometimes that takes over the whole screen. Can you guys see it?
Yeah, it looks fine.
Okay.
It's not presenter mode, but it works.
So I can go to present, right?
Yep, that looks good.
That's better?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, you know, this is a topic that has so many different dimensions that it's very difficult to even talk about this without having so many open questions and other things. So basically, the name Sybil comes from the Greek myth, Sybil as an oracle. In the case of the use of the word Sybil in this context, in distributed systems usage, is the case study of a woman named Sybil with dissociative identity disorder. The reason I spell it out is because it has an interesting acronym, DID, which happens to coincide with DIDs, also called multiple personality disorder. So the defining characteristic is the presence of multiple independent identities mapped to one identity. This would not be a problem. It's not just a psychological phenomenon, but this would not be a problem except when you come to voting systems, right? So you can subvert a distributed voting or reputation system using multiple false identities. So because if it's pseudonymous, then there is no connection to the real identity. So there is a presentation of an identity which we assume is going to be attached to multiple entities, but in reality, they could be all one person or a small group of people masquerading as a huge bunch of people, right? So how does that affect us? So I'll present a couple of examples and then try to go into the blockchain side of things and also into Hyperledger side of things, but I do not have, I haven't done a complete research on the Fabric, Sawtooth, Burrow, or other DLTs to see how they protect against this. So it's due to this whole phenomenon that you can spin up multiple identities, either from multiple nodes that you control, like a botnet, or multiple identities in one node. That means I run several, well, when I say one node, I don't mean one node. I actually mean one machine on which I run multiple nodes. Hence, I'm able to have multiple votes from that machine. And this is quite difficult in the real world because real personalities, you know, you need to have some kind of a presence in the real world. If you walk to the voting booth, you know, unless you're able to repeatedly go to different voting booths and say that you're different people, it's very difficult to do. But in the digital context, it's easy to do this. So it's frictionless to spin up multiple nodes. So there is an appearance of decentralization in the absence of decentralization, meaning only a few people suddenly show up as thousands of people, right? Thousands of identities. So there are some cases, BitTorrent attacks on the mainland DHT being distributed hash table. I don't want to go into the details of that one, but the details are interesting because you'll see how the architecture of the system is subverted in order to gain control of the system. And in Tor networks, this traffic confirmation attack is done by a variant of the Sybil attack. And the possible attack on Bitcoin networks. If we go to this link, you'll see that it's quite interesting because you'll see that, you know, there are several ways in which Sybil attack manifests itself. The attacker can refuse to relay blocks and transactions from everyone. And the attacker can only relay blocks that they create, then using that to do double spend attacks. The attacker can filter out certain transactions to execute double spending attacks. So there, you know, this has a, it's a multi-surface kind of threat, all due to the difficulty of ascertaining the identity presented and its connection to the identity that is claimed, meaning, anyway. So civil attack protection, there's one way to do it is with the centralized authority for identities with a reverse lookup, in which case you which you lose anonymity, and direct or indirect validation, that means there's a chain of proof that leads to a some identity that has already been attested as distinct and separate. The other one is by conducting some kind of a dynamic graph analysis to see whether, you know, to see whether the different entities, which are different identities, indeed belong to different entities. The other one is, you know, showing some kind of a location confirmation, meaning, you know, either an IP address or a MAC address connected to connected to the entity's identity that is distinct and separate, so that we know that it's not just somebody running multiple nodes from a single machine. But this is also, you know, so there is a balance between anonymity or an appearance of decentralization and the protection of, you know, protection against civil attack. So civil on the blockchain proof of work will obviously prevent this possibility, but even there, under the covers, it's masquerading, because you can say that a 51% attack can be done by a single huge pool, and you do not know where the actual anonymous pseudonymous identities attached to the block reward are, you know, the Coinbase transaction are coming from. The other ways, the attack on gossip protocols, that means what, let's look at what a gossip protocol is. A gossip protocol is you basically trying to scale the distribution of blocks. That means I am a new, if I'm a new node appearing on the network, in order for me to get bootstrapped, meaning in order for me to get all of the blocks before I enter the network, I will probably send out requests to the proximate IPs that I know of. In that case, or I can ask for a certain range from, you know, some IP, so that I can assemble my entire blockchain from multiple sources. And this is also available in Hyperledger Fabric and in other DLTs. That is, how do you bootstrap a particular node? The danger there is that if you have the appearance of decentralization, that means I think I'm talking to multiple peers, but I'm talking to just one person masquerading as multiple peers. And if it's an attacker, a malicious attacker, then they can provide you with the wrong blocks, and you can basically, you know, either a list of censored blocks, something that is not on the real blockchain, but, you know, all these different kinds of ways in which there can be deception. So in the Hyperledger context, I still think that this gossip attack is possible, even in a permission setting. We may need, you know, more data in terms of the endorsers, because endorsers is normally a numerical thing, meaning N of M endorsers. We don't know, you know, they have a chain of trust leading to the root CA in most cases. I do not know whether, you know, I haven't looked at it from other angles like verifiable claims, indie, and so on. So the other source of this is the DNS cache poisoning stuff, which is, you know, I'm talking to an IP. I'm talking to a domain. I don't know whether that is a real domain or not. So this is my, you know, presentation on Sybil so far, but I want to expand this. I want to continue this bit of investigation. And my question to you guys was two. One, is it interesting? Two, you know, are there any questions on this specific topic that I can hope to answer or somebody else can answer? Right?
One thing that I think is interesting is how we're all looking at identity, but through different lenses. It could be that would be an interesting presentation as well. The idea of creating kind of small areas, even like one pagers or videos or something on some of the different ideas related to blockchain and related to identity, because it's really interesting.
And Vipin, if I may ask a question, any views on how easy or difficult it would be to really identify the identity of the attacker in the ecosystem you are referring to?
Well, I mean, you know, so the issue is there's always a balance between pseudonymity or censorship resistance and discoverability of the true identity. Meaning, in a permission system like what Hyperledger is supporting, the possibility of this is much lower. But in a system that is a public blockchain, obviously this is a real possibility. In fact, the attacks have already happened. So in order to discover the true identity of the attacker, you know, there are probably many ways in which you can do it by either doing a post analysis of the attack, or as the attack is occurring, some way to, you know, pinpoint the source of the attack, at least the location of the attack. I mean, I'm sure the sophisticated analysis firms like Chainalysis, can do this, at least partly. I am not aware of the actual exact techniques used, so I'm just speculating at this moment.
Okay, sure. And I'm assuming right now we probably don't have any even references or examples of a similar attack being attempted on a permissioned network. At least I haven't come across anything of that sort, so just wanted to see if anyone else.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe they don't want to make it. They don't want to make that information available. Second is because we haven't had any real production systems with a lot of value attached to it that would be, you know, that would benefit an attacker. There may be some firms, penetration testing firms, who may do this to probe the you know, permission network. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, this is a question I want to ask some of the projects. Have you heard of any of the indie guys have heard of any of this stuff happening, or are you using that as in the threat modeling exercises, or they have all dropped off?
I'm here. We do regularly discuss Sybil attacks as a threat, and we track that in the governance. When you issue a credential, you should be issuing according to a specific governance framework that says under what terms you issue the credential and who's going to rely on it. And that's really where we spend most of our time saying, you know, it's at the time you issue that you need to have the right level of verification for the purposes that.
Yeah, but because, like, for example, Sovereign is a public-private, you know, public for read.
Public permission, yeah.
Permission for rights. So how do I know that the nodes I'm talking to are the nodes that I'm supposed to be talking to when I'm reading publicly?
Every entry on the ledger has a BLS state signature that you can validate showing that it was signed by enough of the consensus nodes to ensure correctness.
Okay. Anyway, we don't have to go into the details, but at least this is recognized as a threat and you guys do talk about it.
Yeah, it's on the consensus of the network side, we rely on the Genesis transactions and the BLS state signature, but we do see indie credentials as being one key way to counteract Sybil attacks in general.
Okay. What about you, Luca? You must, you guys must think about this because you're dealing with these certificates.
Yeah, sure. We see the issue of Sybil at two different layers. One is the level of the blockchain itself. And in this case, I kind of agree with what people were saying, that in permissioned settings, it's really unlikely that this kind of events happen unless there's a real strong attack against the governance. But this is quite an issue. So permissioned normally means that you do not have to deal with Sybil attacks at the node consensus layer. The other issue is Sybil at, say, related to the content, especially where using the blockchain for identity. In that case, you might well have different identities related to the same individual. And this is this is what can be, in fact, the credentials can be used to solve the issue, since a properly issued credential offer you the capability to say vote just once, and it goes back to the principle of one person, one vote, which is what's necessary to combat the Sybil attacks. So the issue is there for general permissionless blockchains at the blockchain level, but it is solved in permission world. There is an issue at the identity content of the network, which can be well coped with using credentials. That's our view, and that's what we are reasoning on as well.
Stefan, do you have any comments?
Well, not on that specific topic, I'm afraid, Vipin. The only thing I can say is, in fact, I think I mentioned that briefly during last time we spoke. I'm following the FATF guidance on digital identity, and there was a private sector consultation meeting last week in Paris, which went actually very well. I think we are making substantial progress when it comes to defining the role of public and private digital identity frameworks in financial for financial institutions. It's still work in progress, of course, but I'm a lot more optimistic than before when I see the sort of discussion that we've had, and I think it's realistic that in the coming months there will be a final document that will be published for wider consultation. I think it's certainly heading in the right direction.
But the remote identity proofing, is that not, that is vulnerable to this attack or not? Because you have remote identity proofing. Well, I know, for example, in India demonetization, where you're supposed to, you had this thing where 500 rupee bills were demonetized, and you could only convert, let's say, some certain amount, as a single person. So what happened is people were paying multiple people to take the money to the bank and convert it as if they are, like it's all done on the behalf of somebody, but presentation wise, these are all different physical people going to the bank and converting the money. So this is, it's basically some kind of a mule attack where you hire mules who are actually physically separate people, but in the end they're converting the money for this one person. Anyway,
that's really a civil attack. I mean, it's like, sorry, just jumping in, but it's a great example of a civil attack. They're all working, but they're all looking like different people, which they are, but they're all working for the same actual node in the background. So that's a good example.
Yeah, I mean, the point is, I feel that we are too complacent about the permissioned networks to see that, some kind of sources of these attacks are not yet visible, only probably because, there aren't enough production systems that are in play that would be subverted by such an attack, and huge amounts of money could be extracted from the system using that. Going back to Stefan's point on FATF, I was wondering whether there was any mention of this kind of attack, and was the credentialing part of DIDs or credentialing mechanisms through remote identity proofing, because usually they use some kind of biometric part along with other, it's a multi-factor authentication. So,
well, the No, the FATF document doesn't go into that kind of detail, doesn't discuss the possible attacks that can appear. And in fact, it's meant to be a technology neutral document, right? So it really doesn't go into this. What it says is you need to ensure that you need to be able to demonstrate that whatever digital identity system you're using is sound and reliable. And that basically means using one of more or more defined levels of assurance, which basically make it a lot easier if the identity solution is approved by a regulatory authority than if it is not. If it is not, the FATF document wouldn't completely rule it out, but the burden of proof of ensuring that is to be borne by the financial institution making use of that digital identity framework is much higher. That's the underlying logic, if you wish. But it certainly doesn't go through a kind of detailed description of what the possible attacks are.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't even have to go into detailed description as long as you say, have you taken care of this and how, that kind of thing. I mean, in the sense that it is not, it can be done without going into the technology. I mean, it can be done in a technology neutral way. That means you can say that, okay, real world physical identity has to be connected to one person, but then you have these strange anomalies which I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. About the demonetization thing, which will be very difficult to subvert, because I mean we're very difficult to detect and to prevent.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, it's there even in current financial limit, you know, current financial regulations recognize this attack. It's called smurfing, right? Where you have a certain amount, a limit on a certain amount to be if you transfer more than $10,000, you're supposed to report it. So if you keep the amounts smaller than that, and make it appear as if it is coming from multiple sources so they cannot correlate, then you have essentially tried to, you've broken the limit, you know.
Mm.
So these kind of things can happen. And it has nothing to do with technology. I mean, technology we can use to prevent such attacks. We can only strengthen the system to a certain degree to prevent these attacks. And that's the key thing. And also, is there a way to correlate these? Like Sumit was asking, you know, how do we detect when such an attack is going on? That itself is a difficult subject unless you do some kind of graph analysis, some other information that is leaking through the attack. The pattern of the attack reveals that the attack is going on. You know, this is a very fascinating topic for me, but no, not for everybody. But you know, anyway, I think we have come to the end of the hour. And I want you guys to propose interesting topics in your field of expertise connected to identity and bring it to us so that we can talk about it. We can also challenge some of the projects with their identity system, whether it takes care of, either a regulation or a proposed regulation, or a very well-known threat, all of these things. And this is an invaluable invaluable output of this forum, I feel. Anyway, So it's been a delightful call, and I hope to see you all here in 2 weeks' time.
Thanks, Vipin. Thanks for the conversation.
Okay, thanks, Vipin. See you in 2 weeks' time.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.